Warning, this episode contains spoilers, coarse language, and always sleep with your whiskers out. Cold air makes them grow.
That's why I always sleep without pants.
If it's something that's really well done the first time, it's not broken, stop trying to smash it.
I'm always intrigued to see what it is that people are going to do with something that's already been done before.
I hate remakes.
I love remakes.
Welcome, everybody, to part one of I Hate Love Remakes, episode 13. I am Noel, and joining me, as always, is Evie.
Horsebot 3000, no! I love you!
I love you, Horsebot 3000!
I liked Horsebot 3000.
What are we talking about?
I'm pretty sure we're talking about Community, and everyone should come see my one-woman show, watch Community, or I'll come to your house and do horrible things to you until you do.
Selling tickets till Friday.
So, we're talking about Christmas movies, right?
Yeah, it's our Christmas episode.
And you're back for it. We haven't seen you since
February.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Did you miss us?
Oh, maybe. But just you, Evie, because you're prettier. Sorry, Noel.
I'm not pretty.
I love you too.
I got a tiara.
I have a tiara. Everyone has a tiara.
Fine.
I'm sorry, it's not that impressive.
Anyways, yeah, we're doing a Christmas episode, and I only just thought of, you know, it's episode 13. Why the hell aren't we doing Friday the 13th?
Because it's Christmas.
Yeah, plus I don't think that Friday falls on the 13th in December, does it?
I know, but it's our only episode 13. We'll save it for episode 113 then, maybe. Because we know we'll get that far.
How about episode 31? Because that's how we roll. We're weird.
And we'll release it on Opposites Day.
I like it.
Okay. Evie, you want to tell us what we're doing today?
Sure. We're doing... I'm like non-committal. Like, yeah, okay. We're doing Miracle on 34th Street from 1947 and then the remake from 1994.
Yes, the 1947 version is what we're going to cover here in part one, written and directed by George Seton from a story by Valentin Davies. And I'm not familiar with either one of them.
Ditto.
Yeah, I'm looking through them. I think the only other thing I've seen from George Seton is that he wrote and directed Airport.
I think I've seen some of his stuff, but...
Which was filmed here in Minnesota, using real Minnesota snow.
Yay.
It's authentic.
Well, we have plenty to go around. Yeah, other than that, I'm not very familiar with his career, but do we want to go ahead and dive into a synopsis?
Why not?
Okay. Doris Walker is the events director at Macy's, and she's in the final stages of getting everything prepped for the Thanksgiving Day parade, when a kindly old man named Chris approaches her and points out that the man she hired to play Santa Claus is inebriated. Doris fires the drunk and, noticing that Chris closely resembles Santa, hastily offers him a contract to take over the position, first on the parade float, then in the Macy's store itself as they approach the holidays. Chris becomes quite the sensation, especially when parents start spreading word that he's telling them where to find the toys their children want at the best prices, even if it's not at Macy's. Though initially hesitant, the higher-ups realize such a notion has done wonders for their public image and turn that into their store policy. Their competitors at Gimbel's quickly jump on the bandwagon, and it's not long before the owners of the two rival chains are shaking hands in front of a smiling Chris on the front page of the newspaper. Doris is a disillusioned divorcee who's raised her young daughter Susan to only believe in absolute facts and reality, meaning the girl doesn't believe in Santa Claus. Doris's neighbor and token love interest Fred Gailey is sad to hear the girl doesn't have any fantasy in her life, so he takes her to see the Santa at Macy's. Doris is a little miffed at this, especially when Chris repeatedly claims he really is Santa Claus. Taking a look at his contract, she sees he actually did sign himself down as Chris Kringle from the North Pole. The higher-ups are again frightened, but a retirement home administrator who knows Chris assures them he isn't violent. Despite this, a psychologist brought in to evaluate Chris feels threatened when Chris turns the tables on him. When the psychologist starts to spread word that all people who play Santa do so out of a guilt complex, Chris gives him a knock on the head with his cane and is quickly shipped off to Bellevue Mental Hospital. Fred, a lawyer, comes to Chris's defense and argues at a formal hearing that Santa Claus exists and Chris is indeed that man. The trial quickly becomes a media sensation, with the judge worried about his re-election should he rule there is no Santa Claus, and the prosecuting attorney balking when his own young son takes a stand to admit his father told him Santa is real. Susan, who's come to believe Chris might indeed be the real thing, writes a letter to Santa Claus that's addressed to the courthouse. When a post office employee sees this, he decides that's as good a place as any to send all the other letters to Santa they've received. When the courtroom is filled with bags and bags of letters, the judge dismisses the case because the United States government itself has already demonstrated legal recognition that Santa exists and that Chris is him. After sharing in the victory, Chris invites Doris, Fred, and Susan to a Christmas party at the senior citizen's home. Earlier in the film, Susan told Chris what she really wanted was a house and a father. She confronts Chris, saying she doesn't believe because he couldn't make her Christmas wish come true. Chris apologizes, then gives Doris and Fred directions for a shortcut home. While driving through the suburbs, Susan suddenly jumps out. Her dream home is there, with a for sale sign out front. Doris and Fred decide to marry and buy the home. Leaning against the fireplace is Kris Kringle's cane. So, Evie, do you recommend this movie?
Yeah, I do. It's literally like the perfect Christmas movie. It's just deep fried Christmas crack.
Or fluff.
Crack. I use crack. I don't know. It just works. There are some, I do watch a lot of classic movies, so you do get old school tropes that pop up now and again. But this is just like, I can't word into sentence make doing. Just so good. Happy. Happy.
Carrie, do you recommend this movie?
Yes, I do. I don't really like to hate on Christmas movies, partly because I feel bad. Yeah, there are some really, really bad Christmas movies out there, but I don't know, it's Maureen O'Hara, and, you know, she's perfect, and it's just all feel-good, fluffy Christmas, everything's all pretty, and love, and joy to the world, and Santa Claus. It's fluffy. What can I say? I like it.
I also recommend this movie. It's just such a warm and charming film with such a great cast. It's also surprisingly intelligent. For a film made in the 40s, it doesn't feel all that dated. The exception of a few bits here and there, but there is also a surprisingly sly satirical edge as it really gets into the corporatization of Christmas and people struggling to cling to beliefs in a commercialized world, and even the politics involved with the trial that happens in the later part of the story. It's a really sharp, really well put together film, and it warms the heart. I agree with Evie. It's probably the perfect Christmas movie. Let's just dive into open discussion then. Is there anything we don't like about this movie?
Like, what do we mean by don't like?
The only bit that I kind of don't like is I thought the psychiatrist was overplayed a little bit.
Like, instead of, like, mustache twirly, it was, like, eyebrow twirly or whatever.
This is, like, an early demonstration of the cliche of the psychiatrist who should be a patient himself, and they just really overplay it. I don't really get his motivation for why he's so villainous as he is. Or not really villainous, just an asshole.
Well, you kind of have it wrong, because he's not really a psychiatrist.
Oh, that's right.
He's supposed to give personality tests at the store to make sure that someone isn't, like, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
You're right, yeah.
He's playing it as a psychiatrist. That's the problem that Chris has, is that this guy's basically been playing psychiatrist with, I think it was Alfred at the store?
That's right, I think he's, like, the administrator of the tests, yeah. And he's been pretending to be a psychiatrist.
Yeah, he's playing at it because, I mean, Alfred is, what, 17, 16 or something mm-hmm. like that? He's a kid still. So it's like, you know, he buys into this guy being a psychiatrist. So that's... Yeah.
But then he comes up with this whole concoction of anyone who plays Santa is doing so because they're feeling guilty over having done something bad earlier in their life.
Exactly. Oh, God.
I think they overplay that just a little bit more. It's kind of like, as a plot point, they needed to drive Chris to the point of clonking someone with the cane in order to get into the whole trial angle.
But at the same
angle.
Time, when you see that goose egg, I'm like, well, you kind of, when you get someone who's abusing power that they really don't even have.
Right.
Yeah, it is a bit much, but I do see why they did it.
It's the only bit of the story that really feels like a forced plot point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still an amusing sequence, like the whole bit where he's evaluating Chris and Chris keeps turning it right back on him.
I love that. It's so awesome.
Anything else we don't like?
It's a classic movie trope where you have, if someone is divorced, unless the story is about those two people getting back together, like we saw in Parent Trap, if they're divorced, one of the parents is basically just out of the picture completely.
Right, complete deadbeat, yeah.
And that's a classic movie trope. It's the same where if a girl has recently gotten divorced or is unmarried and pregnant, 9 times out of 10, she's losing that baby.
Hmm.
It's one of those classic movie tropes that kind of bugged me because I'm like, well, of course he couldn't be around at all, but...
Well, what I like is that, you know, for a film in the 1940s, it doesn't really cast any negative judgment on her for being a divorcee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's like that one bit where she kind of like gets into a huff and talks about how, you know, she shouldn't be lost in illusions because or else some Prince Charming will come and sweep her away and disappoint her. But that still kind of feels honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the way that it doesn't treat her as a negative person because she doesn't believe.
Exactly.
If anything, I think they kind of overdo it a little bit with Susan to the point where she's never even heard of fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jack and the Beanstalk, who's that? You know, or like the bit where she can't even play games with the other kids because believing in Santa and pretending to be animals in a game are completely equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a little false equivalency on display there, but you know, it's a little thing. So it's nothing that like undoes the entire movie.
Yeah, I didn't really pick up on that. So
yeah, I never really had a problem with it either. I will say that the romantic thing with Doris and Fred, like, and then all of a sudden they're together, and I'm like...
I like how it fully admits that he's using the kid to smarm his way over to the mom.
Mm-hmm. Though we never actually see them really connecting. It's just more like, then they're together.
It's more like, they're two pretty successful people. Let's get them married.
So again, that's another classic movie trope.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we spent the entire movie around each other. Guess we're getting married.
Right. And I love how, like, there's this entire bit where in the beginning of the movie, the mom meets him for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet her kid has already been going out and hanging out with him and going to the zoo. Who lets their kid just go out and hang out with someone that they've never met?
Yes, but this is 1947 when this was fine.
I know, but still.
Yeah, I'm like, this is 1947. This, like,
I know it's 1947, but that kind of shows one of the problems of 1947 and that they were a little too trusting.
Oh, definitely.
Christmas movie? I don't know.
It's a cautionary tale about how not to let strange, crazy old men into your children's bedrooms at night. Or else they'll be pulling bubblegum out of their beards.
Because you don't even see him blow the bubble. It's all completely off of Natalie Wood's reaction to that.
And you can just tell it's got to be like the biggest bubble ever, guys.
Yeah. And then you just have that one shot of him pulling the gum out of his beard. And it's totally brilliant.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just go ahead and talk about Edmund Gwenn as Santa Claus?
When I think of Santa, that is who my brain goes to immediately, like no one else.
Yes.
That's who it goes to.
He just has such a genuine warmth to him. And he's such a good actor. There's so many great little moments.
Like the scene with the Dutch girl. That was too adorable.
Oh, God, yes.
And that would have been also a reference to the War Orphans.
Oh, yeah. The War Orphans from Europe, yeah.
Yeah, it would have just ended in 2 years prior, so...
Yeah, oh, I didn't pick up on that reference, yeah.
I thought that was actually really, really sweet and got a little choked up because shut up, I'm top, what?
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. I still get teared up, which is just ridiculous because I'm usually such a dude when I watch movies. I'm like, what? Rub some dirt in it.
It's just dust, it's just dust.
Oh, God.
Hey, I cry when I watch Terminator 2, so.
What?
Really sad. He gives the thumbs up. Oh God.
I know.
It's so sad.
So as the man of the podcast, I'm not crying. I'm just leaking pure testosterone.
Yeah. No. You were just so awesome that some of your awesomeness is escaping through your eyes. You just had too much awesome.
Yeah.
Sure.
So what are some of our favorite moments of Ed Gwenn? I mean, we had the Dutch girl bit. We had the bubble bit. Every time he's on screen, he's just...
Yeah.
He is. He's the classic Santa Claus.
He reminds me so much of my granddad. I think that, too, is just one of the reasons why he is just awesome. He's been in so much stuff, too. Like, you go look at his filmography, he's in everything.
Oh, The Trouble with Harry. One of my favorite bits of him.
I think mine was, he was Mr. Bennett in Pride and Prejudice.
Oh.
Loved him in that.
Well, what do we think of Maureen O'Hara?
Her hair is fantastic in this.
Yeah.
Did anyone else catch her accent continuously slipping?
Yeah.
Yeah, at times.
I just took it as just someone who, it's America. You guys have immigrants. So,
I know. I didn't think it was a flaw in the movie. I just found it funny.
She's so much softer in this role than she was in Parent Trap.
Well, it's a bit of a softer character. I mean, I like how it shows a divorced single mother who's a career woman, and it doesn't really criticize her for that in 1940s.
Well, it does in a way, but it's more in that she's not allowing her child to be a child. That's where the criticism is, not so much that, how dare you have a career. And I like that at the end of the movie, there's absolutely no talk of her suddenly, like, quitting her job and, you know...
Especially since Fred quit his.
Yeah.
So she's now the breadwinner.
Yeah, he's going to go set up his own little practice, and she, I guess, is going to do all the work.
Now. Right.
Make all the money. Okay, I love the character of Alfred. He's such a small character, but you get this really great story with it. He's got the air quotes psychiatrist or psychologist or whatever he was calling himself. I love how they don't even have to make a big show of the fact that he sort of basically thinks that the guy is now an idiot and has basically come back to Chris.
Exactly.
And it's just outside the courtroom and he walks up and he says hello, like as they're going to go up in the elevator. I'm like, and that's all you need. You don't need this big, long, like drawn out scene. I'm like, all you need is hello.
And what I love is he's kind of like the spirit of New York.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Brooklyn kid who's just going out doing menial labor. But he still believes in Christmas and wants to go and do his part to put a smile on the kids' faces. He's such a wonderful character.
He's so sweet.
I like the scene with the plastered wife.
Oh, God, she was awesome.
Let's just take a few minutes to just laugh at something that has nothing to do with the story, but it's so funny, who cares?
I think it was simply charming.
She's so, I love that you have, like, it's, I guess, a children's movie, and yet you have someone who's plastered, they smoke before bed. It's like all of that was socially acceptable back then.
I love that the kid has chewing gum while she's in bed.
Yeah, it's like, and she doesn't brush her teeth after. I'm like, wow, your dentist is gonna love you.
Natalie Wood, she had no teeth.
Let's talk about Natalie Wood, because she is adorable in this movie.
I love that she has this great side-eye glare that she just keeps throwing at people.
Yeah, later on when she grew up, she sort of turned it into like a little bit of a head tilt thing that she did.
Yeah, but even as a kid, she could give people the stink eye. I love it.
Oh, yeah, no. You watch that, and you definitely see what she would eventually become. She has just so much talent.
Yes. And then there was the great method acting of pretending to be a chimp.
I love how she keeps kind of coming into the scene because that made me think of every time you're trying to have a conversation and you just have like a kid who just keeps walking into the room and wants your attention and you're just like, okay, I'm trying to talk.
Yeah.
It's what it made me think of and totally adorable. Not at all like a chimp, mind you, but still totally adorable.
Yeah. I like how this film really did dive into the whole kind of corporate satire angle of, we need you to push these toys so we can get them out of stock. And of course, he refused to do that and starts telling people what other stores they can go to find the things the kids want. And then the company jumps on that and turns it into a huge marketing boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other stores follow suit. What did you guys think about covering the entire kind of corporate angle of Christmas in a way that wasn't, it was kind of critical, but still kind of recognizing the fact that that's kind of how it is, and at least we can try to make the most of it.
Honestly, it worked for me. I mean, obviously, in the movie, the corporate guys, they genuinely are not interested in the spirit of the season and whatever, but just the fact that some little thing catches on and they use it as a big publicity thing.
But in a way that still ultimately benefits the consumer.
Yeah, I liked it.
Everyone gets a gift for Christmas. Kind of. And then, yeah, I love the scene where they have the guy from Macy's and the guy from Gimbel's shaking hands.
That was funny.
I do love the fact that in this one, we do have Macy's and Gimbel's and you have all these big department stores that are, because you did have them back then. Whereas now I'm like, you have Macy's and that's it.
And well, you have Macy's Dillard's and Kohl's and stuff like that.
JCPenney.
I don't know if Penny was ever quite on that level. Penny was more of like a Target type place than these big kind of old fashioned spectacle places. Sears, I think, was kind of big too, but then they kind of became more of just a traditional department store. Yeah, we don't really have quite as much in the way of that old school, you go down and see the spectacle of the store.
Exactly.
Well, that's because now we have malls.
I think maybe FAO Schwartz in New York, that would probably be about it.
Yeah. But yeah, I like how they actually did get Macy's and Gimbel's to sign on this. And I love it when they have the Macy's guy go into the courtroom and he has to testify. So do you believe that Santa Claus is real or not? And you cut to his face as he suddenly starts to think about all the newspaper headlines. If he says he doesn't believe in Santa Claus, and he's like, yeah, I guess I do. But then they have to also then do the bit where he sees all the smiling, happy children.
Well,
about the children.
Yeah. Yeah. Mind you, they do play it really cheesy, but it does work for what they're doing.
Yeah, that one bit of cutting into the newspaper headlines is honest. I mean, he'd be thinking about his reputation and the company's reputation and all that stuff, but he also shows he has a bit of a heart. He thinks about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's well-rounded. I mean, it kind of like has that cynical, satirical honesty to it while still showing warmth and humanity. I can't think of anything I really, really dislike about this movie. There's a couple little nitpicks, but other than that.
Even the conclusion and how they get around everything in the court, I'm just like, that's friggin' brilliant.
What I love with the letter bags.
Yeah.
Is that just happened entirely because someone at the post office was like, hey, we got this junk piling up. Let's schlep it off to someone else.
Well, I like that they have that, and then because nowadays you can actually send letters to Santa Claus and you get replies. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, it goes to the dead letter office.
Right. I think this was partially the success of this was partially what led to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that this Christmas miracle that saves the day at the courthouse is just because some dudes were like, hey, you know that junk piling up here? Let's go dump it on these guys.
Yeah. I love that.
Did you recognize the guy working at the post office, too?
No.
That's the grandpa from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh.
That's Charlie's grandpa.
Neat.
So, Carrie, you also caught wind of another little part in the film?
Oh, Fred Mertz?
Fred Mertz.
William Frawley.
Yeah.
The gentleman has a name, and the gentleman has an esteemed career, thank you.
Yes, William Frawley. Well, if we want to go names, the post office guy was Jack Albertson. But yeah, Fred Mertz in a non-comedic role, too.
When he did film, he did a lot of those roles where he wasn't particularly the comedy in that.
Oh, I know. Yeah. At the time, he was kind of an all-around character actor, but all we really know of him nowadays is Fred Mertz.
Well, you guys do, but thankfully I watch so many classic movies that I know
him. I've seen
him
in
a few
others too, but I mean, that's like the wide public conscious image of him. And then I love how he's basically the guy coming up and telling the judge that, listen, if you're running for re-election, if you're the judge who says that Santa Claus isn't real, no one's going to vote for you.
But at the same time, he's kind of saying like, if you say that Santa is real, it's going to make you look like kind of a kook.
Right. I like how they get into the politics of that. Of like, nobody really wants to admit that Santa is real, but they can't not.
Well, yeah, it's...
They don't want to say he's real, and they don't want to say he's not real. They just are kind of having to dance around the issue. I mean, like, I love the judge how... Was it the judge or the district attorney who goes home and the kids are basically just giving him the cold shoulder?
Oh, that's the judge.
Yeah.
Then the DA had his kid put up on the stand.
Yeah.
I love that they put the DA's kid up on the stand... And the kid says, yeah, my daddy tells me there's a Santa Claus.
And he's like, son of a... Which back then, you so would not have... been, like, I guess back then you could pull that, but nowadays you can't pull anything like that.
You can at a hearing, but again, this isn't a jury trial. It's just a hearing to determine whether or not this goes forward as a case. And that's why at the end, he doesn't rule one way or the other, as they get to in the other movie, which we'll get to. He just dismisses the case.
Well, no, it's to sign the commitment papers for... It's not to proceed with the case. It's to whether or not Chris is going to be committed to the asylum.
Yeah, but again, he still dismisses it. So he doesn't really rule one way or the other. So he just drops the charges.
Well, basically, he rules that the government has already acknowledged that Chris is Santa Claus. Therefore, you know, who is he to disagree?
Well, that's his easy way out so he can get reelected.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. Chris in the, I guess, sanitarium, asylum, Bellevue, whatever we want to call it. Him just sitting in that chair looking so broken every single time it gets me. I'm like, oh God, why?
Yeah.
I just wanted to love.
So the parade opening, I love the drunk Santa Claus.
Well,
it's cold outside. A guy's got to do something to stay warm.
Which is understandable, but then he's like loaded.
I know.
Dude, there's a difference between staying warm and I am so drunk.
Jingle
I can't even
bells,
see straight.
Jingle bells.
I think they overplayed that a little bit.
Well, I'm just glad that for a film made in the 40s, he didn't have an Irish accent. That was such a stereotype back then.
I think maybe Maureen O'Hara would have been like, wait a
that,
second.
Yeah, oh, I didn't think, yeah. That would probably be the reason why they wouldn't do that. And I kind of like the little opening bit where he just sees the display in the window of the reindeer and is, you don't have them in the right order.
Yeah.
Like, but
funny.
They all look identical, so I don't quite figure out which one's which.
I guess
but
the joke is that only Santa would know what the order of the reindeer would be. I thought it was cute. I also love the shopkeeper's like reaction of, thank you, crazy man.
Yeah,
I will now
lock
my door and hide in the back for hours.
Let me just go cock my shotgun and then I'll see you later.
It's like, I find it. You know that guy is just like, I hate Christmas.
Well, it's that time of the year again, Joe.
Oh, great.
Bolt down the shutters.
John Payne, he's good. I think he's a really good everyman because he's not overly handsome. He's not overly charming. He's not overly anything.
What I like is that they don't overplay the believer versus non-believer aspect. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just like a little bum that this kid doesn't really get to have any fun with anything. It's not so much that he's challenging like the core faiths that his mother brought her up in. It's just she can't just have a little imagination.
And I do like the fact that when he does take Susan to see Santa at Macy's, when Doris catches them, he's just sort of like, well, I thought it'd just be nice for her. You know, he's got a little bit of that charm going, so he doesn't sound condescending.
Right. But he's kind of using a bit of the swagger he was using in the earlier scene where he's like, yeah, I'm totally using your kid to hook up with you.
Yeah.
I don't know who it was, but there was a line. Maybe he's only a little crazy, like painters or those people in Washington.
Yeah, like painters, composers, or those people in Washington, yeah. Yeah, it was the manager at the toy department. I like that bit where he goes over to listen to Santa just to hear, oh, he's going to sell all of our toys, and then he hears Santa say, oh, yeah, you want that, go to Gimbel's.
And then he just has a shocked... He's just like, wait, what?
Yeah, and then he does the blue screen face, and then the mother comes up to him and starts going off, I don't know what kind of stunt it is you're playing, but you just got a loyal customer. I love the gal who played her, too.
Yeah. Who was that?
I don't know. I've been looking through the credits, and most of these people weren't credited.
Thelma Ritter. It was Thelma Ritter. That's who it was.
Thelma Ritter. Okay.
Thelma Ritter. Okay, because I knew her from Rear Window, but I couldn't remember the name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now I remember her from Rear Window. Okay, yeah. I knew I had seen her before. I just couldn't place her. Thank you.
She kind of plays more or less that same kind of character in a lot of the stuff that she did, and I love her every time because she's awesome.
I love that the mail-bearing court officer, the actor's name is Snub. Snub Pillard.
Okay, no, that's just awesome.
So anything else in your guys' notes that you picked up? Because I didn't take any.
Oh.
I don't usually.
No! I'm kidding.
I don't, because I usually have...
You ruined Christmas, no!
I'm usually able to talk about things, and this is just, it's such a good movie, I don't really have anything to add.
Yeah, it's like we could just like have a big love fest about how awesome we think this movie is, and that's all it's going to be. Okay, Carrie, just give us some outtakes, because that's what we're going to have to do, is like 15 minutes of outtakes. All it is going to be, I like this movie. I do too. As do I. Scene.
Whee! This movie's wonderful.
It is a movie that stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really poke any holes in it. I mean, yeah, it kind of has that schmaltzy, if you believe, you know, your wishes will come true and all that stuff message, but it plays it well. It doesn't overplay it. It doesn't overly schmaltz it. It plays it in a way that even if you don't believe, it makes you wish you did.
Yeah, that's what I really like, is that it has a sincerity to it.
Right, and it doesn't overplay the fantasy angle. I mean, there's still a slight air of ambiguity at the end of, you still don't entirely know if he really was Santa Claus, but by golly, it's...
you don't know if he was or not, but you so want him to be.
You want him to be, yes, exactly. They sold you on the fantasy of it, of even if it's not real, I don't care because it's still something worth believing in.
Exactly. It's the perfect Christmas movie.
It is.
I love it.
This is it. Like, we've got nothing else. We all just really liked it. Like...
Yeah,
I have cold medicine. What's your excuse?
This episode's going to be like half an hour.
Oh, man.
That's why I keep saying everyone do outtakes.
Yeah, we should.
Remember that time that Santa's penis popped out? Oh, wait, that was me.
No. Noel, don't ruin Christmas with your penis.
Well, what else am I going to use the stockings for?
Good point.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, even our Christmas episode, we just can't not be me.
We need some outtakes.
I would say schmoutakes. I'm just leaving this in.
And you were worried about us swearing during the Christmas episode. It's like, is it okay?
I wasn't worried. I was saying, can we?
Well, it's your podcast.
I don't think kids listen to this. I don't.
No.
If some irresponsible parent just downloads this on iTunes and plays this for their kids without knowing what it is, oh, don't write angry letters.
And here I was thinking I was making an episode of the show my mom could finally listen to, but victory on that one.
Well, you can have a for mom edit. They're just for her.
Yeah, that'll like, be the 10-minute cut.
like, cut everything.
So, anything else we want to say about this movie, or do we want to just kind of jump into final thoughts?
Well, I was going to ask about the music.
Oh, go ahead.
There wasn't anything that stood out at
all.
No,
I mean, I think there was music there. It was just very incidental.
You know, you have some music that at least, like, will score a scene and you kind of remember it, where I don't really remember any of it, but... Mm.
It was just there to support the moment. And that's sometimes the best music, where you don't notice the music because it's such a part of the moment.
True dat. I just said true dat during Christmas. Oh, God.
Any final thoughts on the film? Is it just we loves it?
Yeah.
We loves it.
It's our precious.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Maybe my final thought would be I saw the colorized version a few years ago. Don't watch that one. It's not very well done.
Oh,
otherwise,
they colorized it?
Yeah, they did. I don't know why. They did still have the black and white version of, on the DVD too, but they do that
sometimes.
That's
what's nice about DVDs is if they're going to colorize it, at least have the black and white version along with it, which they usually do on DVDs. So
exactly. But yeah, it's really good. If you haven't watched it, welcome to Earth. We will probably kill you if we find out that you are an alien. So, you know.
Right. It's kind of like you can't live in America and not see A Miracle on 34th Street on Christmas.
Well, even like all of North America. So let's include Canada in
that. And even then you should, just because it's such a good movie.
I don't know if it'd carry over to Europe, but... Because I never saw it. Mind you, I never saw it when I was in Europe, but we did not live there for that long, so.
Are department store Santa Claus is a thing over in Europe, too?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Well, if he would have been Santa Claus, he'd be whatever that country chooses.
No, we don't say Santa Claus, but it would be Father Christmas, more or less. The Polish language version of Mikołaj. That's what it would be, which is basically Santa.
Hmm. But yeah, do you pretty much just agree that it's a great movie and there's nothing much more to say about it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's Christmas and fluff, and I love it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that'll bring part one to a close. Eve, you want to tell us what we're going to be doing in part two?
Oh, we're going to be doing the remake of Miracle on 34th Street from 1994.
Yes, and I just want to point out that we would like to have included also the 1959 and 1973 TV movie remakes, but neither one of them is commercially available at the moment. If one of them should ever come out on DVD, then maybe we'll put together like a little supplemental episode just to see what those versions are like. Though I believe they pretty much just stuck to the same screenplay as this film version. Pretty much just different actors and different director, but otherwise pretty much word-for-word script. Carrie, thank you for joining us this episode.
Yay! It was fun.
All right. Good night, Evie.
Humbugs are attracted to sarcasm. Somewhere out there, Tim Burton just got a boner.
No cheeses for us, Mises.
Good night, Evie.
Good night.
To read show notes for this and every one of our episodes, please visit IHateLoveRemakes.com. The comment sections are open, so let us know what you think about the films discussed. I Hate Love Remakes is in no way affiliated with the copyright holders of the films discussed. All rights are reserved and no infringement is intended. I Hate Love Remakes is a Made of Fail production. Madeoffail.net. We were unpopular before it was cool. So... We all ready to go?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay. Welcome.
Sorry.
What?
I don't know.
Don't be the Dana of this episode.
I can't help it.
If anybody should be the Dana of this episode, it's me, okay?
So, Tom Welling.
He has no career now.
Now, are we still allowed to swear when we're talking about family Christmas movies?
Don't we?
I don't, I guess.
Yeah.
So how about that motherfucking Santa Claus?
I have had it with these motherfucking Santa Clauses on this motherfucking float. And to all a good night. Warning, this episode contains spoilers, coarse language, and always sleep with your whiskers out. Cold air makes them grow.
That's why I always sleep without pants.
So that you can have really long pubes?
Absolutely.
We've ruined Christmas.
I hate both of you.
And then I can have children pull on them to prove that they're real.
Okay, that's funny.
I think that's the biggest laugh I've ever gotten out of you in the entire history of this show.
Oh my god, I'm going to turn into Dana now.
So, about Tom Welling.
He still sucks.